The second case for oral argument this morning is the Crompton Corporation and others, defendants and appellants. I'll just let you identify yourselves. How about doing it that way? Because the case pager is about half a page long, and trying to figure out who's still involved is a little bit difficult. All right. Well, we'll figure out who's doing what. Okay, so the appellants Flexus and Flexus America, we would have Mr. D. Jarrett Arp, is that correct?
Correct.
And you'll be going second for 10 minutes?
That's correct.
All right. And then Mr. Ian Simmons represents Crompton Corporation.
Correct.
And you'll do 10 minutes.
That's correct.
And then, gentlemen, you'll each do 5 on rebuttal. All right. And then for the appellee, we have Mr. Sanford Svetkov. Did I pronounce your name correctly, sir?
Correct.
All right. And you'll be doing the full 20 minutes, correct, sir? All right. Okay. And the court should note for the record that Justice Sabres has disqualified himself, and the court has appointed the Honorable Jean Paul Keene, a circuit judge from the Second Judicial Circuit, to sit in his place. Mr. Simmons, you may proceed, sir, and you have 10 minutes.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, Ian Simmons for the Crompton defendants. Members of the court, the defendants asked this court to exercise its de novo interlocutory review of the order below denying defendants' motion to dismiss for lack of personal jurisdiction, because we respectfully submit to this court that order cannot be reconciled with, and in fact is directly contrary to, the well-established law of this state and that of the United States Supreme Court construing the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. There is no dispute between the parties as to what test controls the inquiry here. At pages 12 and 13 of the plaintiff's brief, they concede that the OPP test and the Denver truck test of this court, construing the United States Supreme Court precedent, controls here. We submit to this court that plaintiff cannot satisfy any part, much less each part, of the three-part test for personal jurisdiction spelled out by this court in the OPP case. There, this court stated that to exercise personal jurisdiction over a non-resident defendant, both defendants sitting before you today are non-resident defendants, the plaintiff must meet its prima facie burden up front of establishing jurisdictional facts on 3 points. We submit none of them are satisfied here, much less all. First, the defendant must be shown to have purposely availed itself of acting within the state for the privileges and benefits of this state's laws. We submit the record is silent on that point. Second, the plaintiff's cause of action must arise from the defendant's in-state conduct. That is to say, there must be a nexus between the in-state conduct of the defendant before you and the plaintiff's cause of action. Again, the record is silent on that point. Third, the defendant's activities must have a substantial connection, that's the language of this court construing the United States Supreme Court, with South Dakota, such that the exercise of jurisdiction is reasonable. I will be talking about the first two prongs of the OPP test. Mr. Arp will be addressing the third prong for his 10 minutes and also explaining why some of the out-of-state opinions cited by plaintiffs are simply inapposite or, in fact, flatly contrary to United States Supreme Court doctrine and the tests of this court on construing the Due Process Clause. Simply put, members of the court, plaintiff's jurisdictional argument is that because these defendants allegedly engaged in a nationwide conspiracy on a product that this plaintiff did not buy, namely rubber chemicals, this plaintiff bought tires, these defendants don't make tires. Simply put, the plaintiff's argument is that by invoking the buzzwords nationwide conspiracy, that jurisdiction throughout the land lies everywhere and anywhere. That's it. We submit this is a repudiation, a simple repudiation of what this court said in OPP, what this court repeated in Denver Truck, what this court repeated in the Miller case of 1996, and in fact is a repudiation of the United States due process precedent.
Well, say there is a nationwide conspiracy. Are we simply helpless to protect the people of this state then?
No, Your Honor, you're not. There is a defendant in this case, buyer. There is joint and several liability. Insofar as plaintiff can prevail on his claim of showing that any rubber chemicals price overcharge was passed on by the people that we sold to, the tire manufacturers, none of whom are located in this state. The record's clear on that. There are no tire manufacturers located in this state. Insofar as plaintiff can trace an overcharge down, there is a defendant who penny for penny, dollar for dollar, from all of these sales that South Dakota residents could recover from. But we respectfully submit, Your Honor, that the analysis of remedy should not and does not drive the due process analysis. And we respectfully submit to this court that, in essence, what plaintiff is asking for is a special jurisdictional rule based on conspiracies. I get to invoke the buzzword nationwide conspiracy, and ipso facto, personal jurisdiction obtains in this form. That's not the law. Let me turn, members of the court, to the first op prong. The court stated in op that the defendant, and again, the court is construing International Shoe and the Worldwide Volkswagen, the United States Supreme Court, that, I'm quoting here, first, the defendant must purposely avail himself of the privilege of acting in the forum state, invoking the benefits and privileges of its laws. I submit to you, Your Honor, it's uncontroverted that these two defendants have done nothing within this state to avail ourselves of the benefits and privileges of your laws. That we do not have a physical presence here, that's not disputed. We do not own property here, that's not disputed. There is no agent of ours acting within this state authorized to do business, that's not disputed. We do not make rubber chemicals in this state, that's not disputed. There are not tire manufacturers located in this state, that's not disputed. We are not registered to do business in this state, that's not disputed. How can it possibly be said, I submit to you, that we are purposely availing ourselves of your privileges and benefits and then trying to escape a lawsuit? That the facts do not exist. Let me draw the court's attention to a case that we cited, frankly, in passing in our briefs that we frankly should have underscored to you, the Miller case, 1996 opinion of this court, where jurisdiction was denied because the party over whom jurisdiction was sought interacted with third parties out of the state. The 1996 case, which is cited by both parties here, I would encourage the court to go back and revisit. The court concluded that the defendant there did not purposely avail himself of the privileges and benefits of this state's laws. How can it be said that jurisdiction obtains? And jurisdiction was held not to have obtained. Here, same thing. The parties these defendants transacted with, vis-a-vis a product this plaintiff didn't buy, rubber chemicals, occurred outside this state. We transacted with third parties, tire manufacturers, who control the distribution of the tires that may use our rubber chemicals. And where those tires end up, nobody knows. I submit the nobody knows point, Your Honor. I said that purposefully. I submit what is going on here is not only a request for a special rule of personal jurisdiction by invoking the buzzwords nationwide conspiracy, but what is going on here is a naked invocation of mere foreseeability, which the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, construing the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, time and time again has repudiated. That simply because a defendant may sell a product in the stream of commerce, even if that defendant has the expectation that product may reach a forum state, that in and of itself is not sufficient to exercise personal jurisdiction over that party. Purposeful availment, members of the court, and you yourselves have repeatedly made clear in the Miller case, citing Burger King, where you emphasize it's the contacts of the defendant himself. Purposeful availment, I'm still on the first prong, can only flow from contacts of the defendant, him or herself, with the forum state. We cannot enlist proxies to create those contacts for us. And in fact, no such allegation is made here. So on the face of these facts, how does the appellant attempt to create jurisdiction, purposeful availment here? Again, I'm still on the first prong of the three-part op test. Answer, he asserts that this case meets the concurrence of Justice O'Connor in the Asahi case. Justice O'Connor there, if you go back and look at that opinion, rejected Justice Brennan's position that mere foreseeability in certain circumstances could be enough if you know your product will end up there. Justice O'Connor says, no, that's not enough. Foreseeability plus something else could be enough. Well, what are the plus something else Justice O'Connor itemizes? It's, It's the same facts I said to you that plaintiff does not dispute do not obtain here. Do you own property in that state? Do you advertise in that state? Do you have an agent in that state? Are you availing yourselves of the privileges of the state, and yet you're trying to escape liability? Courts say no to that. Ask yourselves, what privileges and benefits are these defendants seeking to avail themselves of South Dakota? Answer, there are none. None. We're not trying to escape something after having enjoyed the benefits this state has conferred upon us. How does plaintiff attempt to deal with this? Well, they try to provide the plus factor as the nationwide conspiracy. I think when you go back and deliberate, you have to ask yourselves, is this not simply, personally, Your Honor, I mean, meaning no disrespect to the plaintiff, I see that as a zero in the plus column. Nothing else is being afforded to this court in terms of why jurisdiction should be exercised over these defendants with respect to this forum. I see I have a mere few seconds left. So purposeful availment, Your Honor, the record is clear. Plaintiff has not and cannot satisfy. The second prong of the Ott test, Your Honor, likewise, is there a nexus between our in-state conduct and the cause of action? Well, I've told you we've done nothing in the state. Ipso facto, Your Honor, I respectfully submit that there is no such nexus, so they failed the second prong of Ott as well.
Thank you, Mr. Simmons. Mr. Arp, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I'm Jared Arp, as introduced before, representing the Flexus appellants. And I'd like to note one follow-up comment with respect to prong two of the op test that Mr. Simmons was just describing. He ran short on time, but I think it bears noting that in the hearing below, counsel for the plaintiff conceded that there was no nexus between appellant's direct contacts, if any exist, with this forum, and their claimed cause of action. In my argument, I intend to, as Mr. Simmons indicated, address the third prong of the op test, and then finally to discuss some cases from outside this state that are cited by the plaintiff. The first two prongs of the op test have not and cannot be met, but if they were met, a third prong, a final independent due process filter, would have to be evaluated and applied to assess the overall reasonableness of exercising jurisdiction in this case. In the plain language of this court, in Opp, Miller, and Denver Truck, the question posed is a simple one. Do the acts of the defendant have a substantial connection to South Dakota to make the exercise of jurisdiction over that defendant a reasonable one? And I submit there are three considerations that indicate that this prong is not met, and that the question has to be answered in the negative. First, one must remember that it has to be the actions by the defendant himself that create the substantial connection. That's the precise language this court used in Denver Truck, quoting the United States Supreme Court case in Burger King. It will not suffice to rely on the independent actions of third parties. Here, as Mr. Simmons noted, the defendants themselves have taken no relevant actions actually directed at this forum. So on that basis alone, the third prong simply cannot be satisfied. And in this connection, I think it bears noting that in the opinion below, from which we are appealing, the circuit court appeared to focus principally, if not solely, on a few words used by this court in discussing the reasonableness test. And specifically, the court evaluated what it described, and quoting from this court, as, quote, the nature and quality of the defendant's activity. And it spoke of that in terms of culpability, focusing on the allegations of the nationwide conspiracy, rather than inform contacts. And importantly, the court fails to include the three words that this court used in describing that requirement. This court said it's the nature and quality of the defendant's activity in the forum. Here, those contacts are lacking.
Now, you referred to the trial court decision and certain facts that were presented to the trial court. On appeal, do we have to give any kind of appellate deference to the trial court, or is this a pure de novo issue?
Your Honor, I think the question presented before the court is a question of law, and that review is de novo. I also believe that the facts that are completely uncontested in this case indicate that personal jurisdiction does not lie, and thus there is not a conflict that has to be resolved on the factual record. And I think I can illustrate that as we walk through this.
Thank you.
A second point here on this prong is that even if the actions by appellants actually were directed at South Dakota, those actions must, of course, create a substantial connection with the forum. And this court has held explicitly in its cases, including Denver Truck, that, quote, an attenuated affiliation with the forum will not suffice. Now, here, plaintiff alleges that it accomplishes this required substantial connection with the jurisdiction through an alleged connection between the price of a price-fixed upstream input sold outside the state and the price paid by Mr. Frankenfeld for a tire company, tire products that he bought at retail here in South Dakota. If you examine that potential connection as reflected in the record and in the undisputed facts before this court, it shows that that connection, if it even exists, is extraordinarily attenuated. Let me illustrate why this is the case. First, the product in issue, as Mr. Simmons was noting, is a processing input. It's used to make an unrelated downstream product. It is not only not the product that Mr. Frankenfeld purchased, it's not even a component of that product. It's just an input used by tire manufacturers to process rubber that they then incorporate into their tires.
What about the trial court's reasoning that there was a monopoly with respect to this product? Does that have an impact on the analysis?
I don't think it does, Your Honor. I think the trial court presumes that there is a monopolist based on the allegation that there was a conspiracy among the defendants in this case. Now, those defendants, I think it's undisputed, are not the only producers, but they are the leading producers in the United States of those tires. And the fact that they had presumed monopoly power might allow them to exercise more power in pricing their rubber processing chemicals to Goodyear and Cooper and other tire manufacturers wholly outside this jurisdiction. That doesn't say whether there's that activity actually results in some consequence or connection in this case. And in fact, the important thing to realize here is that, and this was my next point, is that these really are independent parties. You've got manufacturers. You also then, once they manufacture the tires and sell them, they're distributors and retailers. For this effect to be substantial and pass through to the retail price of a tire, the alleged overcharge would have to be passed through, and it would have to go through a fairly attenuated line of transactions for that to accomplish. In addition, I think it's undisputed that rubber processing chemicals are a very small portion of the cost of a tire. This was discussed explicitly in the hearing below, and it was uncontested that those chemicals are minuscule in terms of the overall cost of producing a tire. Much has been made by the plaintiff, and indeed the court below, about the notion that rubber processing chemicals are the sine qua non of tires, which is simply to say you can't have tires without them. But that's not a remarkable observation with respect to assessing whether there's a substantial connection with this forum. There are lots of inputs that are necessary to make tires. The technology to make the tires, you have to have labor, you have to have electricity. One could list innumerable inputs without which tires are not made. That doesn't speak to whether there is a substantial connection with this jurisdiction. If there is a connection between the price charged outside this jurisdiction for this input and the retail price, that connection would have to be influenced by whether that input is a major part of the cost. Here, it's conceded that it's only a small part of the cost. And so to lay it out, I hope clearly, the allegation presented here is that with respect to what is a small, minuscule portion of the cost of a tire, there was price fixing outside the jurisdiction that took that minuscule portion and increased it by some increment. And the issue here is whether that some increment, the price fixing increment on the minuscule cost of the tire, was passed through distributor to retailer all the way down. I submit that that proposition is questionable, but even if it was established, it would on its face be attenuated. It would on its face be not create a substantial connection with this jurisdiction. Next, if I may, I'd like to talk briefly about the cases that are relied upon by appellee. They cite to decisions in other jurisdictions for the apparent proposition that engaging in a conspiracy that operates on a national basis gives rise to personal jurisdiction in any state within the nation. Now, the precedents of this court and those of the United States Supreme Court reject this notion for reasons that Mr. Simmons has noted, Those precedents guide this court, not the precedents outside the state. In addition, even if one were to give weight to the out-of-state cases cited by the plaintiff, they don't support jurisdiction in this case because they're distinguishable. Three of the cases, the Tobin, St. Joe paper, and Uberti decisions, are cases involving materially different facts. They involve the sale or resale of a product manufactured by the defendant in the forum, not a component, not an ingredient, not, as here, the third step removed, a processing input that is applied only upstream in a manufacturing process. These cases involve the sale in the forum, not sales outside the forum, a resale in the forum, excuse me, of the product. In each case, the non-resident defendants had taken steps directly or indirectly to serve the forum state's market with its product, such as making deliveries to in-state customers, or entering into distribution relationships requiring that their product be sold in the foreign state. That is to say, getting distributors and saying, I want you to distribute in this state for me, which is purposeful action directed at the forum. In addition, plaintiff relies on the Florida Supreme Court's decision in Executech, which we would submit, for reasons I don't have time to belabor now, was wrongly decided and at variance with due process principles. However, Executech also is distinguishable even if it did apply. There, again, it was the defendant's product, their thermal fax paper, that was resold in the market, and the court found that there was a nexus between the alleged price fixing and the retail price because there was a clear and direct connection. The price fixing was at a wholesale level with respect to the same product that was then sold at the retail level in the jurisdiction. The court found that there was an introduction.
Your time has expired, counsel. Thank you. Mr. Svetkov, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Sandy Svetkov. I'm from San Francisco. With me at counsel table is Tim Daugherty of Sioux Falls. I think that what counsel is asking for is a silver bullet aimed at South Dakota. And what our submission is, they had a scattergun, and it had 50 bullets in it. It was aimed at every state. And that's the nature of a price-fixing conspiracy. The price follows the product. Mr. Arp belittled the notion that their rubber chemicals were a sine qua non of tires. The problem is, his co-counsel said to the trial court, yes, you can't have a tire without it. And Crompton, when they pled guilty in Canada, and that's part of our request for judicial notice, Exhibit B, paragraph 8, it was Crompton that admitted to the words that their rubber chemicals was the sine qua non of every tire produced in Canada. It's the sine qua non, according to Mr. Bradshaw, Mr. Simmons' partner, of every tire produced in the United States. So the rubber chemical is in the tire. The enhanced fixed price, of which they criminally have pled guilty to, is in the tire, and 894,000 of those tires were sold in South Dakota annually. Now, this court has a job to protect the citizens of the state, but yes, they have a right to be reasonably hailed before the courts of South Dakota. And I think that we meet all of the tests that this court has articulated and that counsel relies on. Purposefully avail itself of the forum state, not in the silver bullet sense of sitting around a table and let's rip off South Dakotans. No, but sitting around the table and let's rip off all tire consumers. Because they know, it's not a matter of foreseeability, it's a matter of actual knowledge when you sit around a table and conspire. What's gonna happen? They know their rubber chemical is in every tire that's made. Therefore, they know the price of their rubber chemical is gonna get passed along. Unless, of course, they tell Bridgestone, Firestone, Uniroyal, and Goodyear that they're fixing prices, in which case we have more defendants. But for the purposes of this exercise, we have to say that those manufacturers are unwitting. Now, those manufacturers don't have rubber tire plants in every state in the country. They have them in North Carolina and Tennessee, and they admit that there's jurisdiction in those places. But those tires come everywhere. I'm staying at the Comfort Inn down on Seuss Avenue, and every corner there's a Bridgestone, there's a Kelly. The tires are here, and they know the tires are here. And, you know, Bayer is here, but that doesn't excuse Crompton and Flexus. Bayer, if Bayer is a resident here, then one of the conspirators is here. One of the conspirators is here. And if one of the conspirators is here, all of the conspirators are here. There are lots of links to South Dakota. They're not, they don't have the label South Dakota on them, but they have the label tire consumers on them. Tire consumers everywhere. That's what this case is about. So they purposely...
What authority do you have that suggests that the presence of one conspirator automatically confers jurisdiction over other persons who are in the conspiracy?
No, I'm not saying that's a per se rule, Your Honor. I'm saying that's part of the milieu of what a conspiracy is. If Bayer wasn't here, they'd still be liable. Don't you see? It's the idea that they sat around a table and said, we are going to rip off tire consumers, and we're going to do it by increasing our price, and conspire to do that, a crime in the United States and Canada, and we're going to pass that price through our customers and distributors. But we know what's going to happen. We know it's not a matter of, it's not just foreseeable. This is not untargeted negligence. This is intentional conduct with actual knowledge. That's what distinguishes this case.
How do they invoke the benefits and protections of South Dakota law?
How do they do that?
Yes.
They avail themselves of a global market, Your Honor. They avail themselves of the benefits that their rubber chemicals are useless unless somebody makes a tire and sells it. And so they avail themselves of a global market. In fact, they have a website that says that they are global marketers. We're in the 21st century. We can't go back and recreate the horse and buggy age and say, you got to point the gun at this precise place. You've got to take into account the realities of the marketplace today in the 21st century. And that reality is that you can't excuse people who are not here, who know that their conduct will have an effect here, and are taking, in effect, advantage of the marketplace. They are out of business if somebody doesn't sell tires in South Dakota, Judge Konenkamp. Right? Think of it. If nobody is selling tires in South Dakota or any other state, their rubber chemicals are useless if there are no tires. So they know that the rubber chemicals are riding the tires right into every state, including South Dakota.
Well, are you inviting us to change the law, or are you saying the existing law accommodates your arguments?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Existing law accommodates our arguments if you look at it in the context of a global economy, in the context of a conspiratorial business activity. Because they are not availing themselves of South Dakota precisely, but as Executech and in Florida, the Supreme Court unanimously determined, as the Arizona Supreme Court unanimously determined in Uberti, and I might say, as Justice O'Connor said in Asahi, if you place a product, it is not simply. If the sale of a product is not simply an isolated occurrence, but arises from the efforts of a manufacturer or distributor to serve, directly or indirectly, the market for its product in other states, it is not unreasonable to subject it to suit in one of those states. That is a quote from the Woodson case earlier. And I admit that the stream of commerce alone is not enough, but the stream of commerce plus this conspiracy and the global economy that it reflects is enough to fit the test of the United States Supreme Court in Asahi, to fit purposeful availment, to fit directed act, and to fit the substantial connection. The trial judge got it right. He didn't use the word purposeful availment, but he did use directed act. He did use substantial connection. But if it's directed at and there's a substantial connection, it's inescapable that there was a purposeful availment. They are, if there was a three-sided coin, Your Honor, the three tests seem to overlap in some ways. There's a certain intentionality with respect to what is required. And I think the intention and the actual knowledge is here in the conspiratorial conduct and in the fact that the component is an essential ingredient of the tire. Now, there's another piece to this. There are statutes that put these defendants on notice that they're going to get hailed into South Dakota. South Dakota is one of, what, 20 or 25 states that has an indirect purchaser statute, a statute that was enacted after the Supreme Court said that federal antitrust laws were limited to the direct purchaser only. And in the ARC case, which was cited below but not in the briefs on appeal, it was a component case. It was a concrete component case.
Is this ARC case a South Dakota Supreme Court decision?
No, ARC is a U.S. Supreme Court decision. It's 490 U.S. 93 at 97.
All right.
So when it construed, it was whether or not these indirect purchaser statutes were preempted or not. And it was in the context of a component. So it's no answer to say that it's limited to the actual product. Components are within the concept of the indirect purchaser statutes. So their answer to the indirect purchaser statute is that just confers subject matter jurisdiction. Yes, it does, but that doesn't make the statute irrelevant. It's part of the notice to the defendants that they can be hailed in, that they may be subject to suit as component manufacturers in wherein they intentionally avail themselves of a global market with intentional conduct of this character. Your Honor, although I haven't exhausted my time, I think I've covered all the points I wanted to make.
Well, we have a saying here that goes back a long ways that no counsel is ever chastised for quitting early.
Thank you very much.
I have one question.
Certainly, Judge.
You know, it just seems to me that what you're doing is that you're asking us to adopt a per se rule for commercial criminal activity. No matter where it's committed in the United States or in the world, as a matter of fact. As this would apply in the future, were we to adopt your position, wouldn't that be the effect of what we'd
I can see why you're uncomfortable, Your Honor. We have more than that here. We have the fact that the component is essential. We have the fact that the component is in every tire. We have facts that would have to be met in future cases. It's not just a criminal conspiracy, although that is important because it's deliberate, it's with actual knowledge, and it takes it outside the concept of untargeted negligence, where foreseeability is something you would wonder about. I wouldn't want to drag these defendants into South Dakota for if one tire came into Rapid City and blew up, as occurred in the Woodson case, when the VW was sold in New York and traveled across country and the accident occurred. One. But every tire, all 894,000 of them have this chemical. That's a fact that distinguishes this. Conspiracies are not, they happen too often these days, but that's not the kind of conduct that you're going to see a lot of. And so if a conspiracy is part of the test, I wouldn't be uncomfortable about that. But if the component is essential and the tort is intentional, we're talking intentional tort, essential component, those are stream of commerce. Those are two plus factors beyond stream of commerce. Now, and the advertising. They advertise. So advertise is what counsel mentioned. He admitted advertising was part of the equation. So they advertise globally. So Judge Justice Lindner, you have more than stream of commerce. You have conspiracy. You have essential component. You have advertising. Justice O'Connor only asked for one more component. I gave you three. I'm ahead.
Thank you.
But they also kind of knew this distribution channel would go forward. They knew it. Anyway, I think now I will say.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Stetkov. Mr. Arp, you have 5 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. This case calls for a straightforward application of established law. There is no agreement, at least in the briefs, that this court's test in Opp applies, and it is the law of this jurisdiction. Plaintiff acknowledges that it's the law, but then takes us somewhere else, to a proposition that a conspiracy that operates on a national basis automatically gives rise to jurisdiction at any location within the state. Notably, there is nothing that plaintiff argues here that is unique to South Dakota. They're talking about establishing what is truly a per se principle of national jurisdiction. But the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution is not so easily abrogated. It makes clear requirements and a non-negotiable demand that due process analysis must remain tethered to a state-specific analysis, a state-specific exercise to show that there are minimum contacts with the state arising from the actions of the defendant that are directed at the forum. Prong one has not been established here. Prong one of the Opp test requires purposeful availment of the privilege of acting in the state. Counsel for plaintiff says we have purposefully availed ourselves of the right to act in a global market. That's not the test. The fact that our tires that are manufactured by tire companies go everywhere, something I don't think anyone disputes, doesn't answer the question. In this court's decision in Miller versus Weber, the court explicitly dealt with this situation. In that case, there was an issue of the selling of cattle by a New Mexico resident to another New Mexico resident, with the initial purchaser having absolute discretion as to where that went. But the purchaser, the defendant who was objecting to personal jurisdiction in that case, knew that the ultimate purchaser was going to be a South Dakota resident and knew that there was some likelihood that the cattle would find its way to South Dakota. There, this court denied the personal jurisdiction, saying that even if you know that your product is going to be resold to a South Dakota resident, that will not satisfy the requirement for purposeful availment if the party you're selling to has independent discretion in what they do. That is true here, but here we're one more step removed because we're talking about a processing input, not a product. In addition, when they say they're applying the Asahi Stream of Commerce Plus test, it bears noting that that test requires conduct directed at the forum by the defendant. The plus conduct they are pointing to, again, is a national conspiracy related to rubber chemical prices outside the jurisdiction. And what goes on here, I think, is a little bit of a semantic and truly an analytical sleight of hand, because what plaintiff is saying is you've got a national conspiracy, you've got national conduct, a national market. South Dakota falls within the scope of the nation, we'll all stipulate to that. And therefore, it must have been part of what was directed by the defendant. But this label isn't true to the substance. You have to look at the actual conduct. What was the national conduct here? It was this alleged conspiracy related to prices of rubber chemicals used in tire manufacture. But there's no allegation that tires are manufactured in South Dakota. So whatever that national market is, where the actions of the defendants were directed, no matter what the conspiracy was, it wasn't directed at South Dakota because the product that is the subject of the action is not sold here. In other words, there is no way South Dakota can be a part of some market for sales that do not occur in South Dakota. Counsel for plaintiff also emphasizes the notion that we had an intent, that the defendants sat around a table and planned to rip off tire purchasers. This is not alleged in the complaint. If you look at paragraphs 33 and 34 of the complaint, it does not speak to intent here. And intent alone is not enough. It's emphatically disputed that the intent existed. It's not enough to establish the contact here. Prong two and prong three, I would also submit, are not met here. And in particular, the fact that we're global marketers, the fact that there are guilty pleas with respect to a conspiracy, doesn't answer the question here. Every denial of personal jurisdiction based on the due process clause will disappoint a plaintiff that has brought a case they thought had merit. Here, the plaintiff is asking for a special automatic rule for national jurisdiction, and denying personal jurisdiction here will not result in sweeping foreclosure of South Dakota courts for parties seeking indirect purchaser claims based on price fencing. It would not. This is a narrow case, and there remains a defendant below that it will be subject to the court's jurisdiction.
Thank you, Mr. Arp.
We ask you to reverse. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Simmons, you have 5 minutes, sir.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, thank you, Your Honor. I would simply amplify what Mr. Arp said. He has walked you through. We have tried to walk you through the well-established op-test that plaintiff simply cannot meet. It is, in fact, the case here that the plaintiff is asking for a special jurisdictional rule based on invoking the words nationwide conspiracy. Mr. Arp has demonstrated why none of the op prongs are satisfied, much less all of them. Let me just say something about the advertising point that plaintiff raised, that because the defendants have nationwide websites that anyone can log on to, that somehow satisfies the plus factor of Justice O'Connor. If you look at what Justice O'Connor was talking about, and I'll read it to you, it states, defendants' awareness that the stream of commerce may or will sweep the product into the forum does not convert the mere act of placing the product into the stream into an act purposely directed to the forum. Of course, here, the product that we placed into the stream of commerce isn't the product this plaintiff purchased. And where we placed it in the stream of commerce was not in South Dakota. Justice O'Connor went on to say, additional conduct of the defendant is required that indicates, quote, an intent or purpose to serve the market in the forum state. Let's come back to the fact that when you retire to your chambers, you can log on to the websites that the counsel quotes in his brief. There are no tire manufacturers in South Dakota. Therefore, those would be the people that we'd be advertising to. That's not forum-specific directed conduct. Plaintiff cannot dispute that. Your Honors, we would respectfully just direct the court back to basics. What you said in Op, what you said in Denver Truck. Not only do there have to be forum-specific directed contacts, but they have to be defendant-specific. Anything buyer did or did not do here cannot be imputed to either Mr. Arp's client or my client. This court stated, quote, in Denver Truck, that there were no acts by the defendant itself which created a substantial connection, close quote. This court has been scrupulous in following the dictates of the United States Supreme Court construing the Due Process Clause. Those dictates are not limited to the horse and buggy era. Those dictates have been amplified and buttressed time and time again by this court and by the United States Supreme Court, and we would ask you to amplify it again by reversing the opinion below.
Thank you, counsel. Court will be in recess until 11 o'clock.